everyone. My name is Candace Moore. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much for allowing me to come and spend some time with you tonight. I am very appreciative. Thanks to Kevin, who originally invited me to participate, Andrea, Jessica, just absolutely beautiful and amazing women, and my friends who came tonight. You know, one of them after working like 12 hours, you know, because we're friends, and that's what you do. You show up. It's not that she hasn't heard me. She's heard me. It's not even about that. It's that we just support each other. She's like, I'm actually tuning you out, but I want to support you. So, love you, and I'm just happy to not be drunk. You know what I mean? Especially on a Friday night. You do understand what I'm talking about, right? So, you know, if you are new, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was driving up here from work, so I'm not staying the whole weekend. I'm in the middle of, I don't work on weekends, but I am putting in work this weekend. I have a project, so my boss was not excited that I was leaving early today. We're going to leave it at that. And so, you know, self-supporting and whatnot, right? And it's amazing the things that we have to work through that I don't even know is a resentment that I was not born with an inheritance. Like that, for me, I recently have realized is a resentment. And so, but you know, I'm in the process of acceptance. So, I was going to say something truly deep. What was it? Oh, I don't know. So many things will come tonight. But I will share this with you. It has been a journey for me over the last few months. I lost my stepmom at the end of March. And she was the most important person to me on this planet. And when she passed, we knew she was going to make her transition. She had cancer, and she called me 2 weeks before she died, and she said, I'm stopping chemo. And when I asked her why, I knew why, but when I asked her why, she said, I've done everything I can. I have fought as hard as I could, and nothing is working. And so I thought I would have more time. You know, for some reason, I locked into 6 months in my head, but 2 weeks later, she was gone. When she passed, it changed everything in my life. It changed everything. I had not anticipated that happening. I knew it was going to be difficult. And so the reason I'm sharing this is because of everything that happened as a result of me. I lost my faith. I switched home groups. I mean, there was just a lot of things that this her leaving this planet brought about. And so here's what happened. When she passed, I left work at 8 a.m. I drove 70 miles to where she was. I was able to see her. She had already departed, but kneel down beside her, pray for a safe transition. And then later on that early evening when I was home, I was talking to her all day, you know, just because I love her and I want to make sure she's okay, and she didn't want to go. And so I asked her, I said, I need you to give me a sign that you've made it to the other side safely, right? I'm just going to need that, okay? And so then I started thinking, wait, I don't want to break protocol. I don't want God, right, to think that I'm not being respectful. So I said, excuse me, God, I didn't mean to ask her before I asked you, can you give me a sign that my stepmom has made it safely because she didn't want to go? And I said, you don't want people to be afraid to meet you. You know what I mean? Because we was like, oh, I love God, but I want to meet him right now, right? So so I had no idea that I put a timeline on this request, but apparently I did, and it was 2 weeks. Because 2 weeks and a day, when I didn't get a sign that she was okay, I literally stopped believing. I could not pray. It was just everything changed. And I immediately started having severe anxiety, because if I don't have a power greater than myself and I'm the power, that means the weight of the world is on my shoulders. I'm not just responsible for me, I'm responsible for all of you. You're welcome. And so, you know, it was just a hard deal. And so my home group, I had to change that as well, because I just didn't feel connected. I don't know what was happening. It just brought a lot of things to surface. And I knew that when I made that change, my sponsor would change, because part of her requirement was for me to go to the same meeting that she went to, which, you know, was okay until I was going to make the change. And so I reached out to someone that I've known for years. We traveled together in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love and I respect her. And I called and I said, listen, I'm changing home groups. That means I'm changing sponsors, but I need to make sure I'm accountable to someone until I find someone local. May I be accountable to you? And she said, of course, and she outlined when I would check in, and that was fine. I told her, I had already seen her at another conference, I told her that I no longer believed in God. I told her that I was unable to pray. I told her the absolute pain and how I was shattered from the inside out. And so she said, I understand, and people go through that after a loss. And so now, a couple of months later, she's the person I am checking in with. She is my spiritual guide. And so I finally said, you know, I don't want to just keep stringing this out. I'm going to ask you if you will officially be my sponsor, right? We can just know. I need to know. And so she said, of course, I've considered myself your sponsor since you asked me if you could be accountable. And I said, great, but I need it to be official. So that was Wednesday. And then Thursday, I got an email from her, and this email said, while she was in meditation, God told her to ask me if I believed in him. And God also told her to ask me if I didn't believe, if I was willing to believe. And I thought, wow, what a chatty meditation. So, you know, what an odd email, because we've had the conversation three times that I absolutely do not believe. So I responded back, no. And, you know, I said, I don't want to get caught up into what we're calling it. I know a lot of people that call it God and their actions don't support they have one. So if I can call it popcorn, but if I don't have a relationship, what does it matter? And I said, you know, I don't believe. I am open to suggestions. I'm unwilling to act as if I believe in a conventional God. I said, no, I can't. There are too many things that have happened, and I've been avoiding it, and this is where we are. So she responded via email that God told her that if I said no, that I did not believe, I'm like, I guess God knew because he's God that I was going to say that, that God told her that if I did not believe, that she could not sponsor me. And I will tell you something. That was a hard moment. To stay here, new friends, to stay here will take absolutely everything you have. This has been a very difficult, very painful period for me, but I have walked through storms before, sober, and every storm feels like it's the first storm I've ever gone through. This hit me in a very different place because this woman has been with me since I was little. She was with me when I was in the absolute gutter. She was with me when I would be so out of my mind, drunk and loaded, 3:30 in the morning, crying because I don't want to live the way I'm living anymore. I call her, always collect, which is funny because of the business I was in. You would think I have some coins. Anywho, call her. She would wake up out of her sleep, call her at 3:30 in the morning. She has to be up at 6 a.m., but that doesn't matter to someone like me when I'm living in self and it's all about me, right? I'm done. I'm having a hard moment. Can you come get me? I don't want to live this way anymore. I didn't just call her once, twice. I called her 20, 30 times. Always she took my call. Always if I needed her to come get me, she would come. And a lot of times she would say, okay, I'm getting dressed. Someone would pull up. We're going to call him John. You understand what I'm talking about. So John would pull up and I would say, oh no, it's okay. Click. And I would go off after I woken her up. She's almost dressed. I'm hanging up and I'm going to do my thing. One day, she worked for City Hall for years. And one day, I had been up for days at a time because I drink and do things that keep me very alert, right? And so I was down on Skid Row. She works at City Hall, close proximity. So when I run out of everything and I'm hungry, I'm going to go to her office. I look horrible. I don't look like I'm a female. I'm sunken up, right? I smell horrible. She's been with this position for years. She worked for councilmen, and her coworkers would look at me with disgust. right? They would look at me like, why are you doing this to her? I would give them attitude, because that's what you do when you're in defiance and sickness. And she would come. She was always loving, always gracious. She would ask me if I was hungry. Yes. We would go down to the courtyard. One day I was so hungry. I was eating so quickly. We had plastic forks. I broke the fork in my mouth. And I remember she just stopped. And she looked at me. She didn't say anything. She got up. She walked over. She got another fork. She came back. She handed it to me. And she continued eating. She never shamed me. She just loved me. And so losing her, I've had friendships that I thought I would have for the rest of my life. We are no longer friends. I have had sponsors that I exalted to a position higher than I should have, because they're still human. I've changed sponsors. But this woman trudged with me. And so now I'm looking at this email of, God has told you that you can't sponsor me because I'm going through a rough period. So I thought, I'm not going to email back. I don't think this conversation is appropriate for email. I came home, I called her, and I said, I don't understand. We talked about this. You knew where I was. I was asking you for help. I said, you know, the reason it's difficult for me to find a local sponsor is, one, I'd have to go back to my old home group. I'm not doing that. Two, I want someone that comes from the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't sponsor me from your ego. Sponsor me from our program. The program is not the meetings. It's the big book. The purpose of the steps, new friends, is to bring us into a relationship with a power greater than ourselves. Why would your default not be, let's work the steps? Not, I can't sponsor you if you don't believe as I believe. It says that I find a higher power. They use the word God because our origins are from the Oxford group, and that's a Christian-based group. But it is for me to find a higher power of my own understanding, whatever I call it. It is arrogant of me to think that you have to believe as I believe. That's crazy. It's contrary to our text. And so she said, you know, I love you very much, but I wouldn't know how to talk to you if you don't believe as I believe. And I told her, I said, I don't like what you're saying. I am shattered from the inside out, but I respect that you are standing in your truth. I don't have to like your truth, but I respect that you are standing in your truth. And I said, you're right. You couldn't sponsor me, because someone who sponsors me must come from our book. I am so grateful that I was sober long enough when that happened to know that my sobriety was stronger than that moment. If I would have had this experience, if I would have come to you, I came fresh off the streets when I got sober. If I would have come to a woman who told me that in order for her to sponsor me, I had to already come like I am tonight, polished, I would never have been able to stay. Alcoholics Anonymous meets you where you are. That is what we do here. We don't care what you've done. And you know we're competitive, so don't even tell your story, because you were going to try to top it, right? And so, you know, after we hung up, I the anxiety returned again, and I didn't want to come out of my house. And so I called another member. Because that's what I had to do. I called another member. We talked about it. I'm accountable to her. And I follow direction. And what ended up happening is I also started praying again. I've always called it spirit. Not always, but for the last few years. But spirit really meant God. Now it really means spirit, creator. And, you know, I thought of a time. There were so many when I was out there where my life was almost taken. And there was one time in particular, and that instance where in order for me to be here tonight, there had to be a power greater than myself, that's the power I prayed to. It was that moment, that night, that I clung on to, and it allowed me to start praying again. And so I my faith has been restored. But I'll tell you something. We can talk a lot of stuff until you go through it. You have no idea how difficult it is. It was difficult. It was frightening. And it felt as if I couldn't feel my life. I can feel, I think, a quarter of it now. You know what I mean? But it's grieving. And I'll grieve until I'm not grieving. So that's that is what has been happening over the past few months. I'm just emerging, you know what I mean? I'm being oozed out back into the sunlight. So my sobriety date is August 16th, 1995. That's my date. That date is the reason I get up in the morning. That date is my breath. Over the years, a lot of things have changed. And so I make changes so that my date remains the same. I surrender behaviors and belief systems that will not be supported for me to stay sober. So whatever it is that has to go, it has to go. When I got sober, they told me to write my sobriety date, my first and my last name, and my sobriety date in my big book. I got sober with the third tradition. I still have that book, but in every piece of AA literature I have, my first, my last name, and my sobriety date is written in ink. You know what I mean? Because I came from back in the day when we had telephone books. You know what I mean? And you had those little books that you carried in your purse when you wrote numbers down. And I always wrote people's number down in pencil because you might piss me off and I might have to erase you. And so so I had to write my sobriety date in ink. You know what I'm talking about. So August 16, 1995, that's my date. When I got sober, I was 96 pounds. We are not 96 today. You know, you look back on pictures. I got sober at 28 years old. I'm 50. And so I look back on pictures of, you know, when I was like in early 20s and I was like a size zero and I was always sucking my stomach in. Sucking it in for what, right? And so now that I absolutely should suck it in, I don't feel like it. And when I got sober, I was missing my front tooth. I'll tell you what happened. I shared an opinion and it was not supported. That's what happened. It did not stop me from talking. I talk like that. And it's all about getting the message out, right? When I got sober, there was not a strand of hair on my head, right? So what happened is I would drink. I would enhance my drinking with just a couple of things. And it led me to believe that I had visitors and they all resided in my hair. And when I would get good and drunk, they would start moving around and partying. And, you know, I'm all for you coming over, but you can't be unruly. And so I remember telling my friend, I said, there's something in my hair. She was shocked. She was visibly alarmed. She leaned back. She asked me, how do you know? I said, because while we were talking, they ran from this side to that side. She didn't give me a direction. She shared some information that I embraced. She said, you know, rubbing alcohol will sterilize anything. So I have a gift. I have so many, but one of them is reading in between the lines. Okay, I'm good at it, I just want to say. And so she didn't say, Candace, go to the store and purchase a bottle of rubbing alcohol, pour it all over your hair. But I think we all know it was implied, right? So I go, I buy a bottle of rubbing alcohol, I start getting my drunk on, they start doing their thing. Before I took any action, I was inspired to sit everyone down and have dialogue. And so I sat them down and I said, look, I know you're up there. I know you're up there. You can stay up there, but I'm going to sterilize you. And so what I would do is I would just pour rubbing alcohol all over my hair. It was very soothing in the beginning. And then they began to get immune to it. They started to get aggressive. So I had to get aggressive. I took a pair of scissors. I cut all of my hair off. But new friends, half measures avail us nothing. So I took a shaver and I shaved it all off to the scalp. I didn't want there to be a follicle that they could cling on to, right? And then I would wear t-shirts on my head as if they were fashionable turbans, making my own statement. And so I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking, especially this section right here. You're like, ooh, bald-headed and toothless. Ooh, that's sexy. I know you're thinking it. But the beauty is, right? Maybe not so sexy, but when you come into Alcoholics Anonymous in that condition, the beauty is that you are then in much less danger of being 13-stepped. Because no one wanted what I had, right? Except one. There's always one. You know him. Yeah. You can come in with a patch on your eye and limping, and he will be there for you. You know, here's what I believe. I believe that he saw my potential, okay? I believe he wanted bragging rights to say, I knew her when she didn't have a tooth. You know what I mean? That type of thing. The deal is this. When I came to you in that condition, you could look at me and you already knew how I was living. The beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous, the gentleness of Alcoholics Anonymous, the compassion of Alcoholics Anonymous is that no one held their nose, no one turned away. What you did is you would pat the seat next to you and say, I saved a seat for you. You would talk to me after the meeting. You would ask me, do you have a ride home? You would make sure I had your number. You would say, call me. You would ask me, have you eaten? That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is. We don't care what you've been doing. We have a pretty good idea. You understand? And so if you are new tonight, I also know that you are tender. I know that you are tender. I went through a recovery home, and I came in a state that you understood what had already gone on. But some of our friends come in, and they don't look that bad. I still know that you're tender. I still know that you're tender. It takes everything to walk into Alcoholics Anonymous. And even though I'm going to share my experience tonight, you have to stay. You have to stay and have your own experience. And the one thing I want to say, especially walking through that recent situation, and I'll tell you, that woman is still my friend. I know that she loves me. That is simply her belief. What I get to do is I get to not cut her out of my life. I get to demonstrate what spirit really looks like. Right? That is what we get to do. It isn't do as I say. It is watch how I live. So claim your seat, new friends. It doesn't matter. You will certainly get resentments. Talk to the committee. I'll tell you something. If you're on a committee for a year and you're meeting once a month, thank goodness it's only once a month, because you know there are certain people who want to like talk about the same thing over and over. You want to vote on it 14 times. You know what I mean? You're like, oh my God. And so so you have to get your seat. Make sure it's your seat. You don't leave no matter what, right? I have a lot of no matter whats. My grandmother raised me when I was little, and I loved her. There have been three significant people in my life. My grandmother was the first. And so when I was little, I was terrified of the dark. I was terrified of the dark. And so I slept next to her at night. I would watch her as she slept. And I would pace my breathing to match her breathing, because if she died, I wanted to die with her. That is the depth of love I had for my grandmother. My mom is an alcoholic. She's an alcoholic by her own admission. She was very young when she had me. She was not done doing what she needed to do as an alcoholic woman. I didn't understand it then, but I understand it today. My mother is very well endowed. True story. True story. And she believes in packing her pistol in her bosom because she's quirky like that, right? But in all fairness to her, I have noticed that big-boobed women pack a lot of things in their bosom. Have you noticed that? You can just be having a random conversation, not really thinking of anything in particular. You can say something like, I'm hungry. They're like, you're hungry, you know? I meant that in a clean way. Anywho, so my mom would get her drunk on, right? And whatever would happen in that process for her was just wiling out. So she called my grandmother up, made some incessant demand. I knew who was on the other end because my grandmother would grip the receiver real tight. That little vein would pop out right in the center of her forehead. And she would look at the phone and respond, absolutely not. There we go, the phone. A short while later, my mother would pop over and shoot out all of the windows. Let us be clear, I didn't want what she had, right? There are other cousins and uncles in my family who suffer from the disease of alcoholism. That's not why I'm an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic because of how they drink, what happens to them when they drink. I'm an alcoholic because of what happens to me when I drink. When I take a drink, I don't know where I'm going to end up, but I can assure you there will be movement, right? The way this disease manifests in my family is through a lot of violence. A lot of the members favored shooting. I favored stabbing, tomato, tomato. And so when we got together, at some point, the police were going to be present, right? So I'm going to give you a holiday at my mom's house. Where are we? Labor Day, Halloween. We didn't really party for Halloween. So let's do Labor Day. So my mother is a big gal, big bone gal, and she believes in cooking from scratch. I don't. I'll tell you why. Because it's overrated. That's why. So, but if my mom is cooking, I have to go because she is just that good. It's unfortunate she's so crazy. So if she's cooking, I have to go, but it's like going to any length, right? Now, if you've ever been raised in an alcoholic home, I was not raised with my mother, but I was exposed to her far too much, right? So if you've ever been raised or exposed to an alcoholic environment or a troubled environment, you have to develop for yourself signs when it's time to leave. And so for me, those signs were the music that was playing. I would go over her house, she's cooking. But everything I say, preface it with she's getting her drunk on. Right? So my mother's got her drink going. She has the music playing. I knew we were in a good space because she was listening to the Spinners, right? The Temptations. It's good. We're good. As the day goes on, I can smell the aroma wafting throughout the house. Now she is moving to Diana Ross and the Supremes. Okay. It's all right. It's all right. Who don't like Diana? You know what I mean? So now, a few hours later, we're getting into dusk. Uh-oh. She's been drinking all day. She's been thinking all day. She's getting a little melancholy now. So now we're going to ease into the Sam Cooke junk. Sure. Uh-oh. Okay. At Sam Cooke, get the plate and the foil. You want to get them paired side by side. Much like a sprinter, you have to start getting limber. You got to start getting loose because by the time nightfall hits, it's a wrap. Billie Holiday. Run, right? By the time she starts playing Billie Holiday and B.B. King, you can just forget about it. She's not thinking happy thoughts. She's thinking who left when she thought he was going to stay. She is now going to cry, but she's only going to cry for a little bit. Then she's going to get pissed off and want to fight. Understand? So I don't want you to think her rude. You certainly will get a meal. You just may limp out with it, right? And so, I'm in junior high. And you lose the ability to discern good or bad. It's not good or bad. It's simply the way it was at my mom's house. Junior high, my friends are drinking and having a good time. I want to have a good time too. Very simple in the beginning. What happens for me when I take a drink of alcohol is I cease to care about you. No, I cannot lie to you. We must be honest with each other. I don't care about you before I take a drink of alcohol. There we go. I feel free. But now that I've taken the drink, I'm inclined to share with you, that I don't care about you. Right. So I'm going to have to ask that you resist the urge of pulling me to the side, right? Telling me how I have harmed you, allegedly, you know. Here's what I find. Tell me if you identify. I find that we get over things far quicker than those we've injured. Have you noticed that? So, let's say 3 or 4 days later, 3 or 4 days later, you run into me, and it's clear that I'm back in my happy place. You, however, are still smarting from some alleged injustice, and I remember when that would happen, I would just look. Their energy would always be so hostile. Ugh, so hostile. And I would just think, sugar, turn it over. Get free. You know what I mean? It talks about me in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why I love the Big Book. The Big Book is unique. I'm telling you, it's like my diary. I'm like, how did you even know that this was even going to happen? It's just, so it says that I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate seemingly without provocation. I'm not just stepping on toes, Sugar Plum. I'm wearing stilettos. It's an art. I've mastered it. But I want to share something with you. People take it so personal, right? It's not personal. Yes, you get injured. You got a few bruises. I get it. But really, what's going on is I'm suffering from a vacancy. I'm suffering from a desperation that I don't even know what to call it. There is a vastness and emptiness, and in my desperation to fill it, you are sometimes harmed, right? When we talk about a defect of character, I have to be careful of people that try to tell me, like, what is what. So if I'm having a bad day, and let's say I get angry about something, and someone says to me, you must not be working a program. Shut up. You know what I mean? Please, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't make me not be spiritual. So, a defect of character. Example. If I'm angry, I will obviously pray for removal. I'll do an inventory. That's not a defect of character. That's a natural emotion. If I slap you, that is a defect of character. Do you understand what I mean? So I'm painting a picture here. You got to work with me. So it says it is a natural instinct that far exceeds its intended purpose. That's a defect of character. So what's happening for me is I don't know what any of this is. I'm in the throes of alcoholism. There's an emptiness. There's a discontent. I'm trying to fix it the best way I can. You happen to be here. I moved you out of the way. You say shove. I say moved. And now people have resentments. And so I'm so spiritually unconscious. I'm so divorced from my own self that I'm just unaware. I'm simply unaware. And so I continue to move about the earth like this. But all of these movements create more dissatisfaction, which makes me even thirstier. I'll tell you what happened. I was 9 years sober, and I hit a bottom in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had been in a relationship. I was deeply in love, deeply, deeply, deeply in love. It was my first time ever having been in love. And I've been in many relationships. And someone would always say, I love you. Because I'm a team player, I would say, I love you too, right? And so I was lying. But now I really meant it. And so I was 6 years sober when I got in the relationship. And the thing is, it didn't feel like I thought love would feel. It hurt a lot. It hurt all the time. It didn't look like I thought love would look. I cried a lot. I cried all the time. And my sponsor, Gloria Decker, Gloria is the second person in my life. She was amazing. She was the epitome of what a sponsor is. She loved the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I would go through something, she would say, I want you to look at 3, 10, and 11, 6 and 7, 4 and 5. You know what I mean? Like, we were talking straight steps. Let's get into action. Let's bring it into your life. And Gloria became concerned because she started watching me transform, staying in this relationship. The relationship was verbally and physically abusive. I participated equally in both. You did not raise me to live like that in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so that behavior brings a lot of secrets because you can't have image and secrets, right? And so I'm doing all this stuff, and she said, Candace, you have to leave this relationship. Candace, you are living drunk but talking sober. She said, Candace, you have to leave. And I said, I can't leave. This is my soulmate. And what's sad is I was 6, 7, 8 years sober in this relationship, and that's what love still looked like. Love still looked like paranoia, betrayal, disrespect, right? And so I remember she became insistent that I leave, and I'll tell you what I thought. I'll tell you what I thought. Tell you what I thought. I thought she was jealous. That's what I thought. I thought she didn't understand our passion, right? And so my sponsor at that time was 29 years sober. Her husband, Bob, was 29 years sober. He was sober 3 months longer than she was, but they had been married 39 years. They knew each other 7 years before that. They knew each other as children. They had both been in other relationships, and in young adults, they had gotten married. They had children. They were low bottom drunks. Those children had a front row seat to the alley of alcoholism. But as a direct result of our principles and our traditions, their love had been restored and renewed. They had the type of love that didn't require them to post their relationship status on Facebook. I'm not hating, I'm just sharing. So I will tell you, my favorite relationship status is it's complicated. You know what I mean? That means you're in delusion. So I remember being 2 years sober, and my home group was the Bellflower Big Book group for the first 10 years of my sobriety. My current, woo! And so I know, one lone fan, ride hard. And so my current home group is a Friday night women's stag, 7:30 in Santa Monica. I'm accountable to Claire E., and I've given you my sobriety date. That's my triangle, right? So I'm 2 years sober. Gloria and Bob are on the floor. It's a New Year's dance. And if you're like me, I watch my sponsor. I watch everything she does. And at that point, especially in the formative years of sobriety, I really wanted to emulate who she was. And so if Gloria held her head to the left, clearly Candace held her head to the left. So if you were talking to me, I'd talk to you like this, right? So I'm watching her on the dance floor, and I'm just transfixed because she is gazing up at this man like a starry-eyed teenager. And he's looking down on her with the utmost tenderness. That is love. Love doesn't deceive, it doesn't demean, it inspires, it renews, it affirms, it supports, it expands, it uplifts. When this woman, who had given me nothing but solid direction, told me to leave a relationship in which I was sacrificing my dignity, sacrificing my peace of mind, compromising my truth, fear for me comes out as arrogance. The fear is, I'm afraid to leave. It's my first time falling in love. It took forever. I don't think anyone is going to want to love me again. But what comes out is, I don't want to leave. We're going to work it out. And so she became insistent. I decided to stop talking to her about it because she was tripping. And so I needed to skip the middleman and go to the source. Spirit, spirit, give me a sign. Should I stay in the relationship? The police came. Ooh, not that sign, right? So at this point, the relationship was in the toilet, and so I did what anyone here would do. We got engaged. And wait. The funny thing is all the sick people were like, yeah! No. And so we were engaged for 6 days. But they were long days, like in dog years. And so day six, it was over. I couldn't do it anymore. I had lost 20 pounds. This is my normal size. I was almost 20 pounds lighter. I couldn't hold my food down. I threw up almost every day. Love does not make you throw up. It does not. It does not make you deplete. It replenishes. And so I couldn't do it. And I walked away. I took the ring off my finger. I was so upset. I was angry at spirit. My third step was more of a bulleted list of demands. I was angry at my sponsor because she was right. I needed her to be wrong. I desperately needed her to be wrong. I remember thinking, I'm never going to love again. And magically, 6 days later, I was in another relationship. So, you know, sometimes you just got to let the healing begin. And so I didn't want to tell you guys, we're getting choked up. I felt guilty. And so the second relationship, again, I know there's no judgment in the rooms, right? So the second relationship, they were already in a relationship. I feel heavy judgment right here, heavy judgment. And so, you know, it's tricky, the overlap, right? The technicality of it all. And so that relationship was verbally and physically abusive. The police were back at the house. I lost all the women I sponsored. I remember lying in bed one night. I just was in so much pain, I wanted to check out. I looked over at my partner and I asked, if I drink, will you leave? They said no. I then asked, if I drink, will you drink with me? They said yes. It's deep. The disease of alcoholism is wicked, wicked, wicked. And the thing is, the reason I have to be in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous, the center is to be actively sponsored, to be actively working this process, to be actively of service, to not have one meeting here or there, to have a committed group of meetings, to have a service commitment in each and every meeting, right, is because of moments like these. I was in so much pain. Gloria was dying. She had a rare lung disease. She was in and out of the hospital so much. This relationship that I thought I would have forever is over. And now I'm with this person because that's what I used to do. I'm going back into who I used to be and what I used to do. And so, of course, I am now thirsty. The way I was living made me thirsty. My conduct made me thirsty. And so my thinking, which is now alcoholic-induced thinking but sober, says if I'm thirsty and you're there, it would be rude of me to not offer you a drink. That's what it came down to, and they said yes, they would drink with me. The reason my date has never changed is because it was a sober household. There was no anything in the house. I define sobriety as I don't take anything at any time that affects me from my neck up. I don't drink near beer because I'm not near sober. I don't smoke marijuana with or without a doctor telling me that I can. And I stabilize my mood with these steps. These are personal decisions. So the next morning, I got a hold of Gloria, and I told her what happened. And she said, Candace, you don't have the right to jeopardize someone else's sobriety. Why don't you stop quoting the book and start living by the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous? They're so over the top. You know what I mean? And so I asked her, what do I do? She goes, get away from them. Leave them alone. You know, that whole thing. And so I ended that relationship. That person drank. That was, what, 13 years ago. They're still drinking. I didn't get them sober, and I didn't get them drunk. I understand the inappropriateness of my request. I understand the inappropriateness of me engaging in that relationship. I didn't get them drunk. That's not what I'm not that powerful. I hear all the time, especially women I sponsor, I went out behind a relationship. No, sugar. When I wanted to drink, it wasn't because of my partner. It was because of my own behavior. I met myself, and I was so distasteful to myself that I wanted to drink to solve the problem. You can't get me drunk. You can only introduce me to the parts of me that are unhealed. And that's what happened. It was a painful period. It was an embarrassing period. People were whispering about me. I'm so appreciative of the people who talk to me and not about me. Get your seat and keep your seat. I remember standing at my Monday night meeting sobbing. Because when I'm in full throw, that's what happens. I was a greeter. And I was standing at the door. If you want what we have. And it was the best I can do. You have to see me when I am fighting for my next sober breath, just like you see me when it's all going good. You have to see me like that because you need to know when your turn comes, and it will come. We all get a turn. When your turn comes, you got to know you can walk through it sober. Maybe not gracefully, but sober. And so I went back through the work. That's always been the solution, to go back through the work. Resentment, fear, and sex inventory changed my life as they did the first time. All the steps, but especially the fear inventory. I got down to looking at those fears. I was 9 years sober, and I broke my own heart. I was afraid I was too ugly to be loved, too damaged to be loved, too used up to be loved. I didn't know I thought this, but it stands to reason that I must not think well of myself if I continue to engage in, attract, and think disrespect is a compliment. So the fear inventory, the fear, why you have it, and then column three, what would it look like in a healed state? People get fidgety when you start talking about the steps. Why? That's why we're here. They're like, oh my God, are you going to talk about the steps? Are you going to talk about the steps? How about that, right? And the sex inventory, it was juicy. I can't go into it, but you know what I mean? But it's looking at all of the conduct, and I couldn't blame it on alcohol. Where did I arouse jealousy, suspicion, bitterness, and doubt? When I'm in low self-esteem, that's what I do. I play a lot of games. I want you to prove your love for me. I don't understand the very actions I'm taking is the reason you don't feel secure. Now I don't feel secure, and now we have more dissension. Whom did I hurt? Where was I inconsiderate when I said hello? You thought, and I can see how you would think it, that we were going to be partners. No, I just need you to be cute, have a little bit of money, be freaky. That's it. So the beauty of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is that it meets me where I am, but it doesn't walk away and say, you don't qualify. It says, stand up, Candace, come with me. Stand up, Candace, walk with me. The next question is the game changer. It asks me, what could you have done differently? What? Are you saying something like the new behavior I've been talking about, right? And then it asked me to list my ideal partner. And now, especially because I've been around for a few years, I had some ideals. I had some things I'd seen that I wanted for myself. And I started putting those down on paper. The top one is someone I can pray with. If we cannot pray together, we cannot lay together. Do you understand me? I didn't know that a woman who had done all the things I have done, and I've done plenty, got to request that. I didn't even know it would be important to me. I didn't know there would ever come a time when I would be healed enough to find that desirable. My friend talked to me about waiting 90 days when she first mentioned it. I thought, who does that? People with self-esteem. So arrogance says, I'm not waiting because I don't want to. The fear is, I'm not waiting because I don't think you're going to wait. That's very different. Because I was fighting for my life, the obsession to drink came back. It lasted from 8 to 10 years sober. If you want to know what it feels like to live in hell, let the obsession come back. I fought for my sobriety. I fought for my sobriety. And so when I date, I wait a minimum of 90, and I mean minimum 90 days. I had to start treating myself as an investment. I didn't understand that I was sacred. I didn't even know that, right? I was behaving as if I were spiritually homeless, a transient object. That's not what's happening today. So you have to work for it, and you have to wait for it. That's what's happening right here. Thank you. So anyway, what ended up happening is I was in the throes of my alcoholism. I ended up working for a record label. I did extremely well. I was very young, cocky, insecure, had all the shame of coming from my family with the things that were going on there. And so it's interesting, when you start getting a lot of stuff, you think that'll be the solution. It actually illuminates the problem. Because when the stuff doesn't fix it, now what do? If you don't have a program, what do? You drink. That's what you do. And so my grandmother passed during that time. By the time I found out, she had already been buried. Because I was so busy living in illusions, delusions, and facades, I don't want to go back and see what's going on there. I don't want to be reminded of where I come from. I've already lied about where I come from, how I grew up. Like, everything was a lie. So I don't want to be reminded of it. And so I find out she's already been buried. This woman who raised me, I'm sure she was asking for me as she was dying, but I was somewhere living a lie. And when I found out, I don't know that I had a lot of emotion connected to the moment. I do know that the weeks that followed, it became clear to me that I needed to get away from that industry. My head, which is where the disease centers, said that I was living and working in a world built on make-believe, that I needed to get real, which I don't know how to do. I just know how to get drunk. And so I walked in one day and I just resigned from that industry. I literally walked away from my career. That was it. I wanted to go get real. So I ran out of money after a few months. I ran out of your money too, because you got a little grabby with it. And, I had to make a decision. I'm used to having a label behind me. It's a very different lifestyle, that world. And now I'm on my own. I stood at the turning point. So I made a decision. That decision was to market myself in exchange for a drink. I refer to it as the public relations phase of my development. And so I was an entrepreneur. And when I stepped out there, the investors felt very good about the product. They were willing to invest heavily and repeatedly. And so what happens is, when you start losing your hair and your teeth, my stocks plummeted, and so I had to relocate because the real estate that I was occupying was a bit high-end, and they're a little picky, so I had to relocate to the MacArthur Park Estates, lovingly known as Skid Row, where they don't expect a gal to have all her teeth, and I was out there, and I got pregnant, and it's interesting, especially being sober and having the experiences I have, to think about it, to go back into that moment when it happened. I'm on the streets, and you know what's going on out there, so I don't have to detail it, right? I find out I'm pregnant. I make a decision to terminate that pregnancy. Whether I support that or don't support that issue, I'm not going to get into. When I was little, there were men that came in my grandmother's house often. And they were fond of children in a way that's not okay. Because of the type of alcoholic woman I now was, I couldn't guarantee that a child in my care would be safe. That's why I made the decision. What's interesting in hindsight, because everything is in hindsight, what's interesting is that it was never, well, I'm not going to drink. It was, well, I'm not going to have the baby. That's how deep alcoholism is. It isn't, well, I'm going to stop. There was no check that box. That just wasn't even an option. It's, I'm not going to have the baby. And so when I made the decision to terminate that pregnancy, I learned via every news station, radio station, TV station that a member of my family had been arrested for raping, torturing, murdering, and dismembering my 8-year-old girl cousin. The person who did that is my mother. That's a problem. That's a problem. Because when it happened, it's just one of those things. You don't even know what do you do with that information. I'm on the streets. I'm no longer working for a big label, living in West Hollywood. That's not happening. I'm in five and dime areas doing penny things. There's a baby in my stomach, and my mother is on every news channel, in every newspaper, on every radio station. And I remember in that moment thinking the way my life was would be the way my life would remain forevermore. I had always believed once your destiny had been determined, nothing could ever be done to change it. I always believed that it was written in stone. It is not until I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, broken and devastated, that I found if I wanted what you had and I was willing to do what you do, that my life could be reshaped. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. This is not about whether or not I feel like it. This is a program of action. I didn't have to think it would work. I just had to do what you did. And I think back. 22 years of being with you, of having amazing experiences. I've had a lot of first-time experiences. When you live like I've lived, you just think there is no more first time for anything anymore. You forfeited all that. But that's it. You've given me that. Right before we take the third step, it says three words. We were reborn. That's a powerful, powerful statement. And so in this time, this baby in my stomach, I never stopped doing what I was doing. I just did it with a baby in my stomach, jumping out of moving cars because I was living in a way that necessitated me moving quick and getting out of the car, and it would be moving, and that's what it was. Living in abandoned buildings, like all of that. The distress, I'm so sensitive to energy, and I can't just imagine all the fear my child was absorbing in my womb while I was carrying it. And I was powerless to stop. And so when I went into labor, I was in labor for 17 hours. I had been up for 3 days, loaded. And I remember being in the hospital, coming in and out of consciousness because I was so exhausted when I would come down. And then the contractions would hit me and I would come to they put this little thing on my stomach so I could feel my child's heartbeat. And I just started praying. I was terrified. And I started praying, please let my baby be okay. Please, please let my baby be okay. And so when I gave birth to my daughter, I just cried. I didn't even know what else to do. She was so beautiful. You know when you feel so ugly and so damaged, and then you have this little being and she's so beautiful. And then I would hold her, but she would tremble. She would tremble because she was detoxing. What we are talking about tonight are things lipstick can't fix. I had to do more than gain my weight back, fix my tooth, grow my hair, get a job, and come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had to do a lot of work here. I've not gone outside of Alcoholics Anonymous to do it. It's been done in here with a sponsor who has a working knowledge of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, getting down to causes and conditions. And it hasn't always felt good. I think that this society is so crazy at this point. Everything has to feel good all the time. That's crazy. It didn't feel good when I was hurting people. Why do I have to feel good all the time? It was hard. But I have to take these steps because it's important for me to be of maximum service. I can't do that when I'm still harboring all the shame. There will be a woman who will need me. There has been women who have needed me. We connect with who we connect with. I have to be open. I have to be able to go anywhere, and I do go everywhere, and I stand shoulder to shoulder. I'm not apologetic because of my past. That's part of the foundation that I stand on. I am not my mother. My dad was a pimp for many, I'm sorry, manager for many years. And his brothers were managers too. And so all of that information was in direct contradiction, right, to the other information I had. And I'll tell you, that lifestyle of my mom and dad carried more depth and weight with me for a long time. Sober, I had to unlearn that. That is a part of the healing process to come to believe. It's a process, and it's done through repeated action, repeated integrity-filled action. It is a slow process. Some people come, they get a lot of things, they get them quick. That's not been my experience, and I'm grateful for it. I've had to work for it. I've had to stand when you got yours and I didn't get mine, and learn to be happy for you, to know that you were deserving of it and that mine would come in the way that it was supposed to come. It's a process. I am 22 years sober, solid 22 years. The good, the bad, the painful, the feeling loss, it doesn't matter. That's my date. That date is the reason I breathe. My mother is sick. She will die in prison. She has killed 3 children, not one. All buried in cement. My brother and sister were raised with her. And out of respect for them, I'm not going to go into what they've gone through. When my mother went on trial, I didn't show up because I was on the streets. And I didn't feel anyone would listen to me because I had no credibility. I always regretted that. I always regretted it. But you know, my mother came up for parole. She asked me to write on her behalf. I said, no. I will write. It just won't be on your behalf. And so they said they were thinking of letting her out. I said, that's crazy. What are you talking about? If my mother can walk, she will kill. And so they said, then you have to show up. And so I did. And the months leading up to this is 3 years ago. The months leading up to that, I would wake up out of my sleep throwing up. That's how severe the anxiety was at the thought of being in the same room with her. Wake up out of my sleep projectile vomiting. And the day that I had to drive 4.5 hours to Chowchilla, which is where she is, people in the program offered to go with me. I said, I can't have you do it. I have to do this by myself. I can't talk to you and entertain you and do this. I can't do it. So they were texting me the whole way, we love you. We're there. Call us. You know what I mean? And I faced her. She was trying to mad dog me. I was looking at her right back. I had to let her know, you did not win. You tried to destroy me. You tried to destroy my brother. You tried to destroy my sister. You have not won. And I testify of the things I knew, and they are horrific. And they denied her another 5 years. They said it would have been 3, except that I testified. We get to stand up here. For someone like me, I had 2 choices. Just 2. I was going to sit in a corner and cry, or I was going to stand. I've chosen to stand. Through my cycle, through my sobriety, I break the cycle. I'm not my mom. I'm not my dad. My dad is retired now, and he's not in good health. He has COPD, and he still does heroin and smokes cigarettes. I don't know what that's about on oxygen. But anyway, so, you know, but he loves the fact that I'm sober. My dad loves that I'm sober. He'll say, where are you going now? Where are you going now? So when my daughter meets me, she will not be ashamed. She will find a woman of dignity, of courage, of value, of respect, of worthiness. I can't talk my way into any of that. I've had to walk through this stuff. And so my stepmom, this is the first year I celebrated 22 in August, first year without her, it hurt like hell. But she loves Alcoholics Anonymous. I talked to my stepmother every day, sometimes twice a day for years. It was very painful on my 22nd birthday. But wherever she is, I'm still waiting for my sign. I'm not going to get into that because you know where I go with it. But I know that she's happy for me if she can see. I don't know. So, you know, I'll close with this. So I've gone a lot of places in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I'm invited someplace, I normally have a host. And my host will take me around and show me the signs. And so... you know, whether it's London, whether it's Scotland. But this time, it was in Laconia, Washington. And they have a tulip festival in Laconia, Washington. I did not know, my host told me. And so as we're driving, he starts talking about the, like, you just see fields and fields of tulips, all these colors. It's amazingly beautiful, like you have to see it. And so he starts telling me hundreds and thousands of people come from all over to see the tulips. So he looks at me and he goes, do you want to walk through the tulips? And I look at him and I'm thinking, no, right? But AA has taught me to pause. And so I do a spot check inventory. Because remember, arrogance usually comes out first. But the fear is the truth. Arrogance said, no, the fear is, I don't think a woman like me gets to do something as soft as that, which is crazy because I've done so many other things, but it always comes, doesn't it? Always comes. And so I remember that Alcoholics Anonymous said, say yes to your sobriety, say yes to having a new experience. And so I looked at him and I said, yes, I would love to walk through the tulips. And so I had not these shoes, but I had 5.5-inch shoes, heels on, because no one told me we were walking through tulips. And so we got out the car, and I started walking through these flowers. I have pictures of me with the tulips, and, you know, because if you're going to do it, you got to do it. And so the interesting thing is how transformation happens. This is why new friends, you have to stay, but you have to do it all. Don't just come and do this and not do that and weigh it out and I don't think. Don't do all that. Do it all. Like, get in the middle of it. I don't care if it looks corny. Just do it. In that moment, I became a woman who walked through the tulips. If I would have let my fear make the decision, I would never have known what that felt like. The freedom, the softness, the gentleness, the beauty, the being caressed. How do we become? By doing. After all the hurt, all the deceit, all the darkness, you have transformed me into someone that's able to have that experience. And so when they invited me back the following year, I said, oh, I got my shoes. Are we going to the tulips? Because now it's a way of life, right? At first, I don't know it exists. Now it's what I do. Thank you. You know what I mean? And so that is what I wish for you. I wish for you a walk through the tulips. Not because you want to, but because now that we are sober, we have options. Thank you so much for tonight.